At one point on the way to the airport, we were considerably worried when a communist plane leveled off at our bus and flew straight toward it for what seemed an interminable time, but must have been merely a matter of a few seconds, and then we lost sight of it in the trees. We had expected to see it begin machine-gunning us at any moment. A bus which followed us about an hour later was fired on by a communist plane. The driver, with good presence of mind, drove off the road between the trees which lined it and up to the shelter of a shack there where he was hidden from the plane. As a result, neither he nor the bus nor any of the passengers were hurt. We arrived at Kimpo Airport at about 7:30. And when we got there, we found that those who had preceded us were already being organized, and we were told to organize similarly. That is, we formed groups of from 40 to 50 with our baggage at intervals of 100 or 150 feet along the ramp there at the airport and waited for planes to arrive from Japan. We were greatly comforted by the fact that fighter planes, U.S. fighter planes from Japan, were flying high overhead to protect us from possible bombing or machine gunning by North Korean communist planes. Incidentally, while we waited there, there were some 300 Koreans who had worked for us and were friends of us who waited also at the airport, who had come to see us off. I think you can imagine how they must have felt to see their American friends and protectors about to leave them by air for the safety of Japan while they remained behind, knowing full well that every Korean who had been employed at the United States Embassy or in connection with any of our projects would be a marked man when the communists came in. Not only he, but his family also. Nevertheless, I saw no expression of unfriendliness, no expression of doubts, nothing except the sort of attitude which one would expect from friends who are seeing one off on a pleasant vacation. At about 8:10 on that Tuesday morning, the third day of the invasion, the first transport plane arrived from Japan. A United States Army transport plane. It taxied up the ramp and was directed immediately to the first group which had formed there. As soon as the engines were cut, that group was told to rush out to the plane. They helped to pass their baggage up into the hold, and additional baggage was then carried into the cabin where they were seated in bucket seats, each one with a Mae West life preserver in case the plane should go down in the ocean. As soon as the last one was aboard, the doors were closed and the plane taxied down to the runway and took off. I doubt whether these planes averaged more than 5 minutes on the ground in each case. It was a remarkable performance. They came in at intervals of approximately 5 minutes, and each plane as it arrived picked up its load, taxied back to the runway, and took off again. I was on the fifth of these planes to take off. We had barely left the runway when a member of the crew came back, looked out of the window at the wings of the plane, and then went forward again into the cockpit. We didn't quite know what it was about. About a half hour later, he returned and told us that the pilot had authorized him to say that as we were leaving the runway, a communist plane dove on us, but that it was shot down by our fighter cover. Friends who were on a later plane said that they saw the plane dive, saw it shot down, and saw the communist pilot bail out, apparently safely. A little more than 2 hours later, we landed in Japan. And from there on, we were the guests of the army as it moved this bunch of refugees made up not only of Americans, but of nationals of all the United Nations countries outside of the communist sphere. We were all guests of the army as it arranged for getting us out from underfoot and on our way back home. Now, what kind of a country is this Republic of Korea? And what are some of the factors behind this situation? Well, as you undoubtedly know, Korea is west of Japan. It's a peninsula shaped almost like Florida, running north and south, with the Yellow Sea on the west and the Japan Sea on the right, on the east. It's a country with a history of 3,000 years as a nation, the last 50 years of which have been tragic. Russia has coveted Korea for a long time, and Russian efforts to seize Korea in 1905 brought on the Russo-Japanese War. At the end of that war, the victorious Japanese took over Korea, and claiming that they were acting as trustees to protect the country, in fact seized it, and in 1910 made it actually a part of Japan. For 40 years then, approximately, the little Republic of Korea, not so little, because it's the 11th in total population, it is the 11th country in the world in size. That is, there are only 10 other nations in the entire world having a larger population than Korea. One of those things we often overlook. But this republic, about the size of the state of Minnesota, with a population of about 33 million, was for 40 years, for two generations, the slave of Japan. The Japanese took all of the administrative and supervisory positions. They limited the education of the Koreans. They kept the Koreans out of business, industrial, economic, political, and other types of experience which would have qualified them for competent leadership. And thus, when Japan was defeated at the end of the war and had to withdraw from Korea, the Korean people found themselves without the necessary experience in business, commerce, industry, banking, government, in all of the things that are necessary to make a nation operate effectively. Their position, therefore, was tremendously difficult. How did this 38th parallel division come about, you may ask? Well, very simply, it had been agreed that when the Japanese were defeated, the surrender of the Japanese armies would be made on this basis. The Manchurian army, whose forces were concentrated largely along the Russian border and even over into the Russian territory, would surrender to the Russians. The remaining armies in Korea, Japanese armies in Korea, would surrender to the Americans. Now it so happened that the boundary which divided the jurisdiction of the Japanese Manchurian army from the armies to the south was the 38th parallel. And so an administrative division, which had been made for the convenience of the Japanese army, and which therefore was adopted as the basis for the surrender of the Japanese army concerned, became fixed in the political relationships between North and South Korea. Part of the agreement for the restoration of Korea was that the United States and Soviet Russia would supervise Korean elections, and that as soon as these elections were held, a republic would be set up representing all of the people of Korea. There was a difficulty here, though. During the Japanese period, the Japanese had declared that they were acting as trustees of Korea. And this peace proposal for the end of the war said that the United States and Soviet Russia would act as trustees for Korea until the elections were held. Now, the South Koreans, the Koreans as a whole, I should say, saw in this word trustee simply a pleasant way of saying that the Koreans would be slaves of those who held the trusteeship, as had been the case under Japan. So there was a loud clamor from Korean leaders and politicians against this trusteeship by the United States and Soviet Russia. Only one political party abstained from this clamor. This was the Communist Party. and it abstained, as communists always do in such situations, because it did not wish to say anything that might in any way be interpreted as critical of Russia. So when the question of Korean national elections came up, under the trusteeship, the Russians announced that no one should be permitted to vote, no party should be permitted to vote in this election, which had been critical of the trusteeship. This, of course, meant that from the Russian point of view, the only party which would be permitted to vote was the communists. And when the United States refused to accept such a proposal, then the Russians drew the 38th parallel tight like a drawstring around North Korea and began to break all connections. In the first place, they formed a strong North Korean Communist Army using the usual terrorist and propaganda methods which the Russians have used in such cases in all of the satellite countries. Having set up this strong communist stooge army, the Russians announced that they were withdrawing from Korea. And the United States, in turn, found that it was essential that it withdraw. We, in our turn, set up a small South Korean army, which we were careful not to make large enough so that it could invade North Korea, and were careful not to give it the arms which would be necessary for such an invasion, because we knew that one tremendous force motivated the Koreans in much of their thinking. That is, a desire to reunite their whole country as a single unit. These two sections, then, the Communist North, acting under Russian instruction and directions, and the Republican South, were living almost completely apart. The Communist North cut out all supply of hydroelectric power to South Korea. In view of the fact that the Communist North was mountainous, had excellent hydroelectric plants, and was the center for the production of hydroelectric power, this made the situation of South Korea very difficult. In the North, where the hydroelectric power was, there was also a splendid nitrogen fixation plant which made fertilizer. Note also that such a plant is capable also of being a source of the manufacture of explosives. The Communist North refused to ship any of this fertilizer to South Korea. The Communist North had the mineral resources, it had the heavy industries, it had the hydroelectric power, and so forth and so on. It had only 9 million of the 33 million population. South Korea, on the other hand, was agricultural. It had 24 million of the population, many of whom were refugees who had fled from North Korea. But it had almost no electric power, having been dependent on the North for that. It had no fertilizer, being dependent on the North for that. It had very little coal resources. It was in a desperately difficult situation. Now, the United Nations had named a commission called the United Nations Commission on Korea and had sent it to the little republic to supervise the national elections which were to have been held as soon as possible after the end of the war. Russia and the Communist North refused to permit this United Nations Commission on Korea to go into North Korea to inspect or to have or to supervise elections. And after it became clear that there was no possibility of supervision of national elections, the United Nations instructed its commission to supervise elections in those parts of Korea where it could do so. So elections were held in South Korea, and the government was chosen by the popular vote of the people. A parliament was selected, and this parliament appointed a president, who in turn appointed his cabinet.